It's a little after 9 o'clock on Tuesday. The calendar date is August 12, 2014. And on this tape, you're going to be listening to a conversation with Warren Carleton. I'm Keith Sweet. We're taping at Warren's home in Jackson. Warren, I want to thank you for participating. We appreciate your willingness to preserve our county's history by sharing some of your memories. We're going to be recording this, and the tapes will be made to the public, available to the public without charge. If you say something during the next hour or so that you regret, we'll take it off the tape. In any event, let's get started. When did you first come to Amador County?
I was 1974. I had been looking for a job after getting out of the Army and being in the South Pacific, and my ex-professor told me to go out and get a job. So I started here in Jackson, went all the way to Oregon, and secured the opportunity here in Jackson to become a forester with the Winton Lumber Company. And I started immediately after I completed that tour and have been here ever since.
So was, when in college, your degree was in forestry?
Yes, a B.S. in forestry at Cal Berkeley. And Dean with Dean Bulford gave me good advice. Oh, a great story. I started out at the Teresa's Inn on the Forest Forum night, met John Rokovina and Bill Berry. They wouldn't hire me then. Later on, I showed up on the job to Rokovina, the slugging superintendent's consultation. But my first move I made was into Tuolumne at Westside Lumber Company, and I asked to see the manager and asking for a job. He came out, looked at me, I was in my Army uniform, and he said, "Why does a good looking young man like you want to get in this lousy business?" But I continued all the way to Oregon, Klamath Falls, and secured this job at Winton Lumber Company in Martell.
So that the lumber company was then Winton. What, had it started out as Winton?
Yes.
From day one, it was Winton Lumber Company. How, I know it's had a number of different owners now. So when did Winton sell?
Well, I can't remember the year they sold, but they sold to American Forest Products, who was a competitor on the Calvert side of the river mostly. And subsequently, we had several sales, including Bendix Corporation, and ended up with, I think it was an Oregon outfit that then dumped to Red Emerson, who ran the operation at Camino. He took over and now owns the timber and the plant site.
And that's Sierra Pacific Lumber, right?
I can't remember what name he goes by.
So for our listeners, Winton Lumber was located where, generally now, where Safeway Complex is located up in Martell.
Yeah, that whole complex was owned by the company. And the first days when I first came here, the pond ran clear out to the highway. And the mill site grew in the background, from a sawmill to a plywood plant to addition of a particle board plant.
So when you first came, and what was your first job? What did you do with the lumber?
I was an assistant forester, and I worked mostly in the woods, mostly with our contract logger, G.T. McDonald Logging Company. And their logging superintendent was John Rukavina, a well-known guy around the community, and very well, and very often looked up to. And he eventually became an employee of Winton when Winton took over the logging and did their own logging, didn't have a contractor.
So at that time, Winton was a lumber mill that bought logs.
No, they had their own timber.
Well, they had their own timber.
Yes. Okay.
So this and their timber was on private land?
Yes.
Not forested land?
No, it wasn't on Forest Service land, but adjacent to it. And eventually we started buying Forest Service timber sales in competition with the other mills in the facility. And the two of them, I remember, were Berry Lumber Company and Wetzel. Sister Wetzel and Elliott Lumber Company from El Dorado County.
So were you logging, or you say you were out in the forest. Were you basically just in Amador County?
No, we were basically in Amador County, but we owned a lot of timber in Calaveras County above West Point. And when I arrived, the forester that hired me, Bill Berry, said he had been hired to build the road into Calaveras County. And another guy took his place. So he became the forester, and a guy by the name of Walt Hansen became the road construction man to build that road over into Calaveras County. And he utilized the county road up above Pioneer in part, and then built a new road from West Point on to the east to its terminus at Blue Creek. But it was quite a fight with the supervisors because they hated to see the road destroyed for a season, but they appreciated the fact it was going to become a two-lane road. So, Amador County supported, Calaveras County did not, because they had to see the timber leave the county.
So, speaking of the county, how did the counties benefit from the lumber industry? Was there a benefit?
A big benefit in employment and taxes. And most of the lumber was shipped by railroad to the east using the Amador Central Railroad, which we wouldn't own. And as I said, most lumber went to the east. And they did an interesting thing because it had white fir down here as well as Doug fir, two different species. But Doug fir was a lot heavier, especially when dried. So, when they had cut the white fir into a dimension as its house building size and shipped the lumber east, it was very dry because they put it through the kiln and they got a break on the freight. The freight was based upon Douglas fir, which was heavier and never dried, shipped green, against white fir, which was shipped dry, and to weigh a heck of a lot less. So the freight rate was another addition to their coffers.
So Winton Lumber Company owned Amador Central?
Yes.
And of course Amador Central's terminus was in Martell, right?
And I own.
And then you shipped it from Martell, where the lumber mill was, to
I own.
To I own.
Oh, I own to SP and parts of the state.
And of course that's all gone now,
except the Amador Central.
Yeah. In fact, the Amador County Historical Society, as you know, is in along with the Amador Central Railroad organization, a private organization,
yes.
You know, is joined together to try to keep that
keep it going
between Amador, between Martell and Ione. Anyway,
it's quite an historical site.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you ridden the train back and forth between
yes.
the two locations?
I rode the train from Martell to Ione, and I was coming back, and our manager at the time was in the cab of the engine, and he made a misstep and hit the emergency switch. So we had a long time getting home.
Stop the train. Back to your job as a forester. What were you doing then?
My job was to work with the contract logger, and to mark all of the timber, being a forester, and mark the tree that I thought should come out. And I also worked on the tax angle, making sure that we paid taxes on every parcel that was in the vicinity of Martell and in Calaveras County. So I was part of the staff, but spent most of my time in the woods. And I got to know the loggers and what the game was, and became a very good friend of John Rukovina after he got over the distaste of foresters.
How do you spell his last name?
Rukavina, I believe.
Okay.
He used to always carry a couple of silver dollars in his pocket, and he loved to give them to kids and have them squeal with delight.
So, after you marked the trees, and you had to, of course, take into consideration, I guess, access as to how you could get into that particular...
True. Generally, roads outside our general logging territory to other properties, if we bought their timber, things like that. And I worked a lot with the Abenor assessor and his helper in the ownership and the map making that they had done at Jackson. And I learned quite a bit from them about ownership.
Now, the lands you were working on, though, were private. You said it were privately owned.
Yes, they were owned by Wynton, more or less. Sometimes we had a timber right on another private owner, and that was either in perpetuity or it was based upon time. We had a little property on the Allen estate, not much.
Today, there's a lot of regulations in all industries, and certainly in the lumber industry, having to do with environmental impact of logging, et cetera, et cetera. Back in the 70s, what kind of restrictions did you feel you were under that were major consideration in terms of logging?
Well, at the time I arrived at Wynton in 74, California had embraced the Forest Practice Act, passed it to the legislature. And the state was divided up into various timber areas, like the South Sierra, which I was in, North Coast, South Coast, and interior areas, and they had forest practice rules which you went by. And we could go into young growth timber and cut to 18 inches, but we had to leave a good seed source. Trees that would provide enough seed to regenerate the area. On old growth timber, we had to leave at least two trees a little larger in diameter and also have a good seed source. And we had rules having to do with slash, roads, and fire protection. And they grew more onerous and better as time went on because we operated as foresters, as well as the state people, to review these rules annually and to improve them where necessary. And eventually, the State Board of Forestry was formed, and they looked down upon us, and we had difficult times with the State Board of Forestry, but the big deal was the state getting rid of the forest practice rule.
So the state eliminated those rules?
Yes, eliminated rules, and we started operating under the direction of the Board of Forestry. They had their own rules, which they looked at annually, and we participated in the discussion about them.
Do you remember some of the distinctive differences were in those sets of rules? forest practice rules and then the State Board of Forestry, how did the rules change?
Oh, for a better left cutover area so the forest would regenerate faster. Plus, rules on roads, fire protection, and I can't think of others, but we used to be with the forest, with the Forest Practice Committee, and with the Board of Forestry, every time they had a meeting, to make sure they didn't slap a rule on us, it was pretty onerous. But forestry improved all the time, as long as you kept a figure on it. But you had to be careful, we weren't locked into a corner. Yeah.
I know nothing about forestry and logging. So other than a few pictures I've seen and some, you know, the articles in the newspaper and so forth, looks like a rather tough business.
Well, it can be made tough, but if you're interested in growing timber, which the witches were, you protected your cut over very carefully from your logging. I remember when I became a logging superintendent, one of the foresters of the company came to me and said, your foreman is letting the cats run a little wild. And I looked over the ground and I said, and I agreed with the guy, and he just stopped the cat from bumping into some of our leftover trees. But the Wittens came out here with the idea that eventually they would probably have a perpetual forest. And that was the job they gave me after my first few years with Witten. Protect the forest because we want to continue it indefinitely. And they pointed to a operation in Washington up near Puget Sound where the company, I can't remember the name of the company, but they took their timberlands and put it against the forest for service timber in that area, and they made what they called a sustained yield unit, which would be operated, they hoped, in perpetuity, and they would do the logging and the harvesting and the regeneration carefully, so they had a unit that stayed in perpetuity furnishing timber for the life of the mill. And the Wittens eventually embraced that concept out here and tried to establish a sustained yield unit here, but the guys on the outside, such as Berry Lumber Company in Wetzel, said, hey, how about us? We're entitled to the Forest Service timber too. So it didn't fly because of the competition. Understandably.
Right. Now, was clear cutting used back then?
No. All the timber was marked. The forester marked the timber. For Winton.
Right.
For Forest Service, their project sales officer handled the timber sale and marked the timber ahead of time, which we would bid on.
Without getting too technical in terms of, you know, logging practices and so forth, how did you determine where you would build a road in order to get, was that in conjunction with the county so that maybe those could become a county road at some point?
No, they were our roads. And we would establish them by walking the ground and uses a compass and an abdi level to flag the center line of that road. Then I would come along and would look at the road, and then I would mark the timber. When I was a forester, I would mark the timber on the right of way. The right of way falls would fall that timber, and we would build the road. And we built our own roads. Since we had to haul logs on them, we built them pretty good.
When you say you built a road, did you bring in gravel or road base or
something? Sometimes we had to bring in rock to get over boggy areas, And some roads we did rock them, not do gravel on, put gravel on them with a little oil later on to hold them in place because they were going to be permanent. But for the most part, the spur roads would be closed for entry until the next cycle of logging.
So you marked the trees to be cut, and then Winton loggers came in, or you hired contract loggers?
No, we had a contractor initially. Afterwards, it became Winton, and we hired contractors to take care of the corners of our timberland that we did put our big sign on, and we were able to increase our production at the sawmill, so we had the need for more loggers to do the logging on these corners.
Now, there are pictures, and of course people who lived here up until probably the mid to late 90s would see a huge pile of logs up in Martell, up, you know, again, for the general public, up where Safeway and Jack in the Box are located. Now, you talked about a big pond. There was a big pond of water there, and then there was a pile of logs and had sprinklers sprinkling on it. Can you tell me what the process was? I mean, you marked the trees, they got them cut, put on a truck, brought to the mill, and then what happened?
Well, we first used the pond because it held enough timber to carry us through the month or so, or so forth that we operated on, and we had enough wood that we decked dry at a place at the mill to carry us through the winter. But it was in short supply. It was a nail biter to see if we had enough logs to make it through the winter. But we changed our system. I made a trip with the superintendent and his assistant, and we looked at log handling all through California. And we came back and cut down our backyard and made a big place called a deck where we could store our logs. And we brought them in faster than we could put them through the mill. And of course we built our plywood plant, so we had a bigger demand also. But we took these logs and decked them up in big piles. We call them a deck. Put sprinklers on them and sprinkled the logs to keep them fresh. And one thing you had to do with pine was to keep the sapwood of the pine from deteriorating. If you just decked the pine up and left it there for some time, the sapwood would turn blue and that would degrade the lumber. So we put sprinklers on them, which kept them fresh. And we learned that from our trips from California. And of course my job was to get it bigger all the time, so I had the woods and the deck, and I was learning more about logging and storing logs, and so I was chasing John Rokovina. But anyway, back to those decks, which we put in the sprinklers to keep them fresh. We also bought bigger machines for loading the trucks. Eventually buying this so-called Laterno, which could take a truckload at a time. Then we had to sort the logs, plywood, lumber. So we dumped the logs in front of a shovel, as you called it, and put a grapple which could pick up the logs and move them around. So we sorted with that shovel into a sealed bin, which when loaded was picked up by Laterno and taken to pine or plywood. In other words, the fir, if it was, could be turned in the plywood plant, would put in a plywood sack pile, otherwise it would saw logs. So that's how we separated.
Now, back the pond. Did every log go in the pond?
No. We kept the pond as a standby and eventually covered it up.
But originally the pond was to keep the log wet. Then you went into the decking process, which you picked up on your trip around the country, the state. Okay. All right. Now, seems to me that I heard the phrase big log mill, small log mill. Does that make any sense?
Sure.
What kind of a mill was this one?
Well, a small log mill had a smaller carriage for carrying the log into the saw, whereas a big log mill could handle big logs or small logs. But they did like the small logs.
They did?
Did not.
Did not, no. And when you are out on the roads now, it seems like the trucks are carrying what I would consider small logs.
Two. The trucks we see now are carrying the residual from the rim fire, the dead trees from the rim fire
okay.
to the sawmill.
Now, how could you tell the difference from a log that's going to go into plywood versus lumber? What is there something distinctive about the end of the log or the size of the log? How do you know which is which?
Knots.
Okay.
The fewer knots, the better. But you can put a knotty log into plywood and knock out the knots and put it in a patch. But some people don't like to do that. They would rather lay it up with the knots and ship it out rather than knock the knot out and make it a better grade of plywood. But you can take a small knot out. Big knot, no. Makes it a little difficult.
Now, you started off as a forester, working out in the forest, and then you became a combination forester and deck manager.
True, I agree.
And then what was your progression in the company?
Well, I worked with the logger, and I worked with the foresters, and I worked with the decking. And eventually, John Rucavina retired and took his job as logging superintendent. So I had logging, the deck, as well as be a logging superintendent.
Now, did you ever get into the production end of the business?
No. Very seldom. Just a little bit.
So, and then you retired from the business.
I retired from the business as logging superintendent.
So how many years were you, what company owned it when you retired?
Boy, that was a tough one. I forget who owned it. Oh, it might have been a combination of owners at that time, but I'm not sure. Everything happened so fast that I can't keep kind of deadlines.
Now, what year did you retire?
In 84.
Okay.
I spent my entire life here, but I enjoyed it very much.
Well, now, I think you said at the beginning you moved here in 74.
84, what did I say, you retired?
You said you retired in 84.
Yeah. Came here.
Oh. You came in 47?
47.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
47.
There we are. All right. All right.
Boy, I'm getting old.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Yes,
that makes more sense to me. I thought I heard you say 47, but then it didn't click right. You said 74.
Thank you very much for getting me straight and narrow this morning.
So in 84, was there any big difference in 84 in the lumber business than in 48? Here in Amador County.
Well, we probably increased our utilization of the log using more of the fiber. For instance, the pine log bark and fiber went into the particle board more or less, more so than the fir. And also we got rid of our, what we called a wigwam burner. We got rid of that burner, and the residual of the log we didn't use went into pulp, either as fiber or as fuel. So we're using more of the log. We got away from our burner that we had in 1947. We used to burn the slash that developed in the mill. We no longer did that. We used it all.
We
did a better job of sawing too, getting a higher grade of lumber. Then we used more of the strips that we stripped off of the log on the edges of the board. So I would say utilization improved tremendously.
The forest today, when you're driving through the highways anyway, for those who don't get off, you know, it's hard to see. You can't imagine anybody even walking through the forest today. Was it different in 47 than it, you know, today? Was it more open then, or?
Well, in the old growth, generally, the old growth timber had become big trees, and they had fewer small trees, except when one of the old timers would fall over from age or be killed by the bug, then young trees would take over the area that the canopy covered up. But, excuse me, for the most part, when I go back on some of these roads outside of timber, outside of Winton's ownership, I find more vegetation, more trees, more branches. They need a forester. Open it up a little bit.
So part of your job as a forester was on your Winton property anyway, was to keep it open, to keep it clear, so it would grow better, or
for a time we didn't bunkie with the dead trees. Then in areas that we had we hadn't got to, the trees would be growing, but now and again the bug would come in and kill a tree or two. We started salvaging those trees before letting them fall over. And we also would, when we saw a forest either infected or getting old, we would cut there rather than cut into the young growth timber, let it grow. I remember going back behind Rukovina when he wasn't logging fir and cedar, and taking the fir and cedar off. The pine was there already, but the forage had to start to take off because it was being threatened by the trees he had left. He left it because they were not merchantable or salvageable or sellable at that time. But I went back in this one area and took off the fir and the cedar that had been left behind, and I visited that area about a month later. And to this day, I say, the young trees that were still there said, "Thank you."
You mentioned fir, cedar, and pine. Are those the three primary woods that we have in Amador County, in this area?
We have fir, cedar, and pine. And the cedar used to go to Cal Mills, more or less, because they cut it into pencil stock. We took the fir and the pine into the mill here. We frowned upon the white fir at first, but then they put in the pine wood plant to make it into plywood. Ah, we liked it very much then. But the Douglas fir could either go into home building pieces of lumber, or could go into plywood, one or the other.
Is there more of one than the other in the?
Well, generally on the south facing slopes, facing the sun, you have the pine with some cedar and fir. On the north slopes, you have more fir with pine here and there. Big trees of pine once in a while yellow pine, but let me put it this way, fir and cedar, but mostly fir, but thrush soaps, fir, soft soaps, pine.
Hmm. Interesting. There's different kinds of pine, though.
Yes.
And are both satisfactory for lumber?
Both are satisfactory for lumber. At my time, the big sugar pine were cut into thick boards, and they were shipped east for pattern stock, for one thing. That is, going into foundries where they made a pattern out of the sugar pine
pattern stock
for the metal object. And it also went into piano keys for keyboards. Sugar pine.
Really?
Okay. And then into boards to put up for as side, you know, or interior trim or interior boards. The ponderosa pine, the clear stock, and the stock had a few notches, went into what they called pattern stock, but into windows and doors. Nice to cut, but still a lot more straight than sugar pine. And then the boards went into side boards and interior dotty pine. And some of the, I forgot, the cures of both species went into molding for the interior part of the house.
Okay.
White fir, they use it for building buildings and houses, and also for pig pens back in the Midwest.
How did Whitten market their lumber? Did they have salespeople across the country?
Yes.
Trying to sell the
They had a sales company spread across the states. And into Canada. Whitten also had a mill in Canada, and they handled Canadian, can't think of the name, they called it spruce, but it was a house building, not lumber.
Was Whitten a privately held company? Or?
Yes, it was all private.
It was like the Whitten family? Was it a father?
It was a family organization. One gentleman had come out of General Mills. He was a big shot in General Mills and married into the Whitten. His name was Charlie Bell. And most of the other folks, more or less, had been tied to the lumber development for some time. And they, as I said, they developed up in Canada, and they had a little different operation up there. They would put down a mill, and the Canadian government would give them a license to cut all of this timber within sight of that mill. And after it was cut out, they'd look for another license. They eventually ended up in British Columbia, and they had a mill in northern British Columbia.
So these weren't portable mills, though?
No.
It was...
They were big mills like they had here. Handled a small log.
Was there ever a Whitten family member that was at this location here?
Yes. Oh, yes. As when I arrived, Bob Whitten spent a lot of time here. And they would hold a meeting with Charlie Whitten and their auditor, and Charlie Whitten and Dave Whitten would come out here often. During the summer, stay a week maybe and leave. But they kept an eye on things and hired good managers and kept it going.
So in the general framework of their company, how many mills did they operate at any one time? But do you recall?
Operated two mills.
Just two?
Yes.
In California.
One in California, one in BC.
One in Canada, okay. Okay. So they, now, what was your competition locally?
Locally was a Berry Lumber Company and Cecil Wetzel, for the most part.
Berry Lumber Company?
Yeah. Berry Brothers Lumber Company. They had a mill just north of Cook Station, down the hill and down where the drainage were. And they operated their sawmill there for many years. It was Wetzel was at Omer Ranch, and eventually moved to a site near Highway 50 in El Dorado County.
So there were essentially three mills going in Amador County?
Yeah, they had some portable mills, too, around the area. And they would move around, but they mostly cut, for the most part, mostly cut on this young pine in the foothills. And they converted that into boards. We bought from them sometimes.
When you mentioned the name Berry, now there's a Berry still living in Jackson. That's Ken Berry.
Ken, is Ken that a, part of the family?
Is that a real? That's the same family.
Same, okay. Same family. Yes. Yeah.
So, just to stay on the Berry mill for a moment, how long did that last?
I don't know when it got started, but it was going when I was here, and it lasted. We competed for many years. I forget when they closed that mill, but they had some good people who hired some of them eventually. But I can't remember when they started, when they ended, but they were tough competitors. They turned out a good board.
But I have a vision, you know, I didn't move into the county until the early 90s, but the lumber mill up in Martell was still functioning at that time. It's a huge operation, appeared to be a huge operation. How, in terms of size, how was the Berry mill or the other mill? That
we were a little larger than they were in the sawmill business. Then we had a box factory which made units for housing, that's the cases for windows, doors, and so forth inside the house. And then we put in a plywood plant, which was an addition. Then we added the particle board plant to that. So it became a pretty well integrated operation.
So you had the logs, you cut the logs, they went either into plywood or
lumber
or
sawdust,
but there was, or then you had a box plant, which...
Well, the box, not a real box plant, we called it the box plant, but they made very little box lumber, mostly interior frame for windows and doors.
Windows and doors.
And so forth.
Did they actually assemble the frame?
No. They shipped the lumber, they shipped the finished product.
Okay. So somebody else had to build the frame. All right.
If they shipped the finished product.
So it's quite an operation, actually. I mean, that grew over time. And
it grew, yeah.
But you were still out in the yard most of the time.
I was in the yard or in the wood, yeah. I had nothing to do with the lumber so-called production. I messed with them, but I didn't have any responsibility.
So during the time you were working, what would be the largest number of people you were supervising?
Time I was working? Well, the biggest group of people they had were the loggers and... I had probably 40.
When you hire a logger, you're basically just hiring their truck to come and haul stuff in and out, right?
No, that would be a contract hauler.
Hauler, okay.
But when we hired a logger, he took care of everything.
He cut it? I mean, dropped it and dragged it and...
hauled it and brought it to the plant.
We scaled it and paid him.
So did they get paid, or at that time anyway, were they paid by volume, weight?
Size. Number of board feet per log.
And you did that, of course, just by measuring the log.
Yeah, measuring the log. We had scales at a phase platform at Martell.
So when you do a measurement like that, is that board feet? That's productive board feet? I mean, that's... Because not all the log is usable.
It uses the normal scaling measure, same as the Forest Service. There are so many board feet in that log, which can be converted into 2x4s, 1x, 12x, whatever, the number of board feet. And we use the scaling stick and the scaling method.
Okay. All right, let's take a break here because we've almost killed up an hour, and we'll stop it here and then start again.
Okay.